Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Foster Kids Unite podcast. Tanya Cooper speaking, and today's guest is Patrick from LegallyKidnapped.com. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm sorry about the technical difficulties. Finally, I got it right.
just clicked through finally.
Yeah, sorry about that. That's happens. Right. This is what happens. You don't have a big team, you know.
It seems like a new program, but
it is. They changed it on us, so that's what the problem is.
Yeah,
it was so much simpler before, but now it's all this press here and do that and wait for this. So I apologize. If you're just tuning in, this is Foster Kids Unite Incorporated podcast, and we try to do a monthly podcast and have a topic in reference to foster care, foster children, adoption, anything thereof. This week, we decided we were going to take a different approach and talk about perhaps people that don't actually get their children back easy, or why the children don't go back so easily with a family member in some cases. Patrick, I know your site. Tell us about your site. How about that? First, tell us where they can go look, and then tell us about your site.
Well, my site is LegallyKidnapped.com. Mm-hmm. And what doing basically is preserving the record for a lot of the problems that we need to fix, mm-hmm. whether it be in the child protective or the foster care system. Mm-hmm. It on the surface, you know, when you see a lot of the news media reports, the reporters tend to be very friendly to the system.
Yes.
And you don't get a lot of the truth of how it really is. There's a lot of secrecy. And there's just a lot of problems with it that need to be addressed.
Definitely that. The system fails at times, and, you know, we can't figure out why, but it definitely does. I was trying to get a hold of Shelly, because she's an example of a grandmother who, something happened with her daughter and the son and their child, she's not able to get custody of them for some reason or another. Now, I know there's always three sides to every story, but mm-hmm. what it sounds like from what she's telling me, it doesn't make sense that these kids are still in foster care when they have a grandmother that perfectly is capable of taking care of them and wants them.
It's hard to say. I mean, there's a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. I've seen some grandparents. I know some grandparents who've been fighting tooth and nail. And they're doing all the right things, but mm-hmm. the problem is they're not considered a party to the case. Uh-huh. And so they really have no say in what happens to the child. And, there are times when, you know, if they terminate the parents' rights and the mm-hmm. kids are living with the grandparents, mm-hmm. you know, they might take that kid away from the grandparents and try to adopt them out because the child has now been, you know, the rights have now been terminated. But
yes,
it really depends on, you know, where she is in her case. And, I mean, you know, every case is different. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I can come up with a universal way to, you know, win against CPS because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there are many ways, there are many things that you have to do, but, you know, it's best to be on top of it from the start.
Well, what are some of the advice that you can give our listeners on if they have a case where they're trying to get a family member out of foster care, or maybe a parent who didn't do it? Now, my only thing is, if you're a parent that sexually abused your child or beat your child, I'm the personal believer that you should never be reunified. That's just my personal opinion, my personal belief. You should never be reunified, especially if you sexually abuse a child. Never, under no circumstances should that child ever go back home. So barring that, if anybody's out there listening and needs advice, what would you say?
You know, there are a few things that you can do. Number one is to document everything.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that, you know, if you make a phone call, you write it down and you have the dates and times, because they'll sit there and say, oh, well, you never tried to get hold of me. And then you have, you know, a list of 10 times you tried to call and mm-hmm. left voicemails and left messages with the receptionist, get mm-hmm. the name of the receptionist.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's, and you know, it's really best to stay organized.
Okay.
And to, you know, address everything that is in any court orders, because if they're removing your children, mm-hmm. then there's a court order. And that court order should spell out what you need to do to get the child back. Now, unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, it's not as cut and dry as you do this and we'll give you the kid back. It doesn't work that way.
Right. It's not.
You know, there may be a lot of hoops that you have to jump through. And, yes. you know, things may require a lot of work. Like, you know, for example, if you're there's a heroin epidemic.
Yes, OxyContin is very big. I'm a substance abuse counselor. That's my other gig.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, a big problem that leads to, you know, a major increase in the number of foster kids.
Yes.
Like in my state, you know, yes. I'm not sure. In other states, it might be meth, and in another state, it might, you know.
Right. No, absolutely. Still the same thing. I mean, you know, I went in for heroin addiction, and now it's back.
You know, and
40 years later.
Never easy to get off of that. So, I mean, it can be a lot of work, but, you know, if you're on drugs, obviously that's the thing you got to get off. And, you know, they're supposed to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they take your kid and the judge says, well, you need to go to counseling. So then it's the job of CPS, right. you know, or the caseworker to, you know, help you find a counselor. Mm-hmm. And the only problem that I have with that is and everything. You're getting somebody who's friendly to them. You're getting somebody who's, you know, working with them from contracts. So mm-hmm. if it's possible, you know, I recommend getting your own. And by doing that, instead of, you know, having somebody who works for CPS, you're getting somebody who works for you and can advocate for you.
Right.
You know, whether it be writing a letter right. you know, to the court or, you know, I mean, your lawyer would, you know, pretty much handle that, but you know, by doing these things, staying organized, documenting everything, you know, you're really helping your lawyer to do his job. And if you don't, and, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I've known parents who have gone, you know, done it and done everything they had to do to get the kids back and they won their cases. And I know people who, you know, a year later have no idea what's in any of the paperwork because they get them and it just piles up and they don't even read it.
Wow.
And then, you know, at what CPS comes back at them with.
Well, that's I mean, do you think it, I know it's all about the money, but a lot of these contracts I think are kind of scary because that's what keeps people in limbo so long. You know, yes. Even when kids age out, you know, I knew a young man who was aging out, but he got in some trouble with marijuana, so they sent him to a rehab. So he was sexually abused in the group home that he was in by the counselors or whoever. But he didn't want to tell because he said he's going to end up staying in the same group home longer. And he was about to age out. So if he tells, there's so much paperwork to go through it. And he'll probably have to be around the same people because they wasn't going to take care of it the way they're supposed to. That he said that it was literally like his biggest fear was someone telling, because now he's got to stay. Instead of leaving in 30 days, he's going to be staying there for longer until they get all the paperwork right. So everything mm-hmm. comes down to paperwork and money, it appears to me, which is really, really sad, because so many kids that could be home if they had intervention services. But see, they don't want to do intervention services because that means less money for them. You know what I'm saying? Sure. If they say, okay, like my mother was a heroin addict. So if they were to say, let's go in and help this family. She's on heroin. Let's see if we can get her in a program treatment and get her help. Back then, they wouldn't. That was 60s, 70s. Forget about it. It was not happening. Matter of fact, the drug epidemic after Vietnam just started exploding, especially in the black neighborhoods. They started bringing heroin in and, you know, doing all this crazy stuff. So, you know, it wasn't going to happen then. But let's say 2018, if a family... if it's drugs that the mother is abusing and none of the kids have been abused or sold and nothing crazy like that, why can't they say, let's get this person in a program. All right, we'll take care of these kids until the mother completes the program. And even if she doesn't, there's got to be one family member that's legit to take. I mean, I had 9 aunts and uncles. Why didn't anybody ask any of them to take us? You know, I found out later, but my aunts and my mother was very adamant about us staying up in you know, Bedford versus Bed-Stuy. So, and you know, and I hear that's a good thing that it happened. So sometimes it's good, foster care works for people, but there's times where I know they don't have to be in there. It's all about the money. And if it's going to be about the money, that's fine too. But I teach foster kids that, well, let's make them work for their money. Because that's the truth. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you're going to get your free education. Make sure you're going to get transitional housing. You're going to get a Section 8 title if you need it, whatever it is you need. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
But so, that, a lot of that depends on what state you're in.
Exactly. Oh, definitely. I see that clearly, hands down.
Everything, you know, is different from one state to the next. They all.
It absolutely is.
You know, in some states, it's different depending on what county you're in.
Oh, yeah.
Like California, for example. You know, Los Angeles County runs their own child welfare system as does every other county in the state. Mm. And so they all have their own policies and procedures and,
right.
You know, these things. And a lot, you know, some states, I mean, there have been test states, you know, recently because there was a waiver program from a few years back. And what this waiver program was designated to do was take some of the federal dollars that are designated specifically for foster care. And, you know, enable the, you know, CPS to use that particular money for family preservation programs. And the states that have done this have found that they were able to lower the number of foster kids in the states.
Okay.
And, you know, like Maine did this, I think Utah was one, Oregon was one a while back. I mean, you know, but then... You know, in Maine, you know, we became leaders at keeping the kids in the home by providing services to the parents while the kids were still in the home and, you know, supervision, monitoring them with Child Protective. And, you know, it became very successful because they were able to cut the number of foster kids in half. This was between like 2001 and 2011.
Right.
And that was also under a Democratic governor. And now we have a Republican governor who's very, very anti-welfare.
And he's very what? He's
anti-welfare.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he's a Republican governor. The Republicans are generally against, you know, a lot of these programs. And what he did was he came in and under the guise of welfare reform, cut as many of these services as he could. So now, you know, the number of foster kids is creeping back up.
Yes. Well, but the numbers are fudged, in my opinion, too, because here's the thing. You could, there was 500-something thousand kids in care, and now it's down to, quote-unquote, 350,000 crap, bull crap. But the real truth of it is, that's because if it's grandma watching you, then now not putting that as classifying as foster care. But in my, and the real truth is, to me, it still is. It's not your mother and your father. So it still is, and everybody's still getting paid. So it still is, but they changed the name, the wording to soften it, I guess. And they're adopting off a lot more kids a lot quicker, which is what scares me.
Yes.
And a lot of kids coming from like China, Russia. Like one of my friends, he told me he was sold for $20,000. My thing is, oh, really? You were sold for $20,000? You think that was really a legitimate sale? Like, do you think that was really through it? No, they went through an agency. Yeah. Something tells me that. Well,
less. The international adoption numbers are way down in the United States. And, you know, countries like Ethiopia have banned foreign adoptions altogether.
Good.
And Russia, a few years
ago, because these kids are being sexually abused a lot. Some of them, not all of them. Some of them being sexually abused. And they're making sure they cut off their heritage so that these poor kids grow up feeling so unplaced and misplaced and, you know, not feeling like they know anything about their culture. They can't even identify with their own culture. That's sad. That's sad. If I'm going to take a girl from China or Russia, I'm going to Russia and China on a family trip every like 5 years. And we're going to find out what town they're from. You know what I'm saying? What are Russian customs or what are Chinese customs? That's the way you're supposed to do it.
Right.
Not just say, well, you're just going to all of a sudden be a Black Baptist. You know what I'm saying? That's it. You know, because they'll confuse when they get see other people that look like them and say, wait a minute, why don't we do that? We don't go here. We don't do that. They're not going to understand that it's going to be foreign for them to hang out with people that look like them, even though they are probably from the same place. And it's going to be foreign for them to hang out with regular people because they don't look like them either. So there's no teaching of self-love and teaching of self-culture so that you can enjoy everybody else's culture. You know, I believe if you know about your own, you have no problem with anybody else. I think your racism is less likely if your parents or foster parents, adopted or whoever, trained you that, you know, what your thing is or whatever that is, and then branches you to be introduced to other people so that everybody's comfortable and not feel like they're a foreigner in their own place.
If you look at some of the adoptive communities, I guess you could say, you could take, like, you know, I can group people into things like the evangelical Christians. And one of the things is they, you know, some sects of this, I guess, they believe that they have this moral obligation to adopt. And so some of them will do it out of foster care, and some of them will do it from, you know, foreign countries if they can do it. But the foreign adoption numbers are really down now because the Trump administration has made it really hard for these, you know, families to obtain visas for the children. So, I mean, there are cases right now that, you know, I just posted one, you know, within the last week where there was a family who can't bring a child, I think it's from China, because they can't get the visa. And then there are issues now where some of these kids who were brought over here, you know, the Trump administration is trying to deport them.
Were the ones from Africa?
Well, not necessarily Africa. There's a Korean family.
Oh, really? That's a surprise.
Is a soldier. He's a U.S. soldier.
Oh.
And they adopted a kid from Korea, but the kid is, you know, getting a little older, and they want to deport the kid because, I guess, some technicality, or some issue with the paperwork or something that they just can't seem to work out.
That's ridiculous.
Family is planning on moving to South Korea if this happens.
That's crazy. I can't believe it.
It's ridiculous. I mean,
that's horrible because, you know, because some of these kids, some places really need it. So I understand it. I'm all for it. If, like I said before, so you know about your culture, because I know there's places where, you know, some of the orphanages in Russia and certain places where kids are being sold for sex. I mean, it's disgusting. India is horrible. You know, they have different places have horrible, horrible ethics on their orphanages and the things they do to make money. It's disgusting. Even a place in Texas, actually. There was a place where the kids age out. Get it? Come over here. Come here. The kids age out, and they are trafficking them.
Yep.
Literally trafficking them. I was like, what is going on with our world, man? You know.
The kids are vulnerable, and you know, I mean, you know, I think it's a lot. You know, they're not nurtured by their parents, so they bounce through a system instead. So they're lacking the love.
Mm-hmm.
And these people come in and they give them that love, and then they sell them something. And that's one of the easiest ways. But, you know, there's a huge, you know, child trafficking scam going on. You know, kids in foster care go out on the street. You know, I mean, there's just so many who run away. You know, I live in a city where we have a teen center here. And that teen center, I believe it's like 80% of kids in, you know, have ran away from the foster care system.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them, for whatever reason, whether they're abused or they just couldn't get out of the way. So,
yeah.
You know, I know the DA just places them there now because they don't have any homes, so they're just putting them in the teen center and then they're running the streets.
Yep. It's a big, big, big problem, and I don't know how to really address it. You know, I started Foster Kids United, Inc. to help aged out youth with little things, non-traditional services. You know, we're not large, but we try to do what we can. If we hear of something, someone that needs help, we try to get them through school. Because really that's the only best weapon is education. Education or a tool that you can turn into money, one or the other. Like drawing or writing, singing or something like that. That's another way, writing or whatever. Have you ever heard of the book The Lost Children of Wilder?
No.
Oh, this is about the struggle of foster care by Nina Bernstein. It was a great book. If you ever want to read about the history of foster care and how it became a money-making business, you definitely want to change it. Definitely want to read that book.
Set me off was called Memoirs of a Baby Stealer. Oh. And that was written by a foster parent named Mary Callahan from Maine.
Oh, wow. Really? But is it called Memories of a Baby Stealer?
Memoirs of a Baby Stealer by Mary Callahan. And basically what she found was that, you know, in Maine, and this is just when I was getting started in this, too, because we had an issue with CPS when my daughter snuck out the back door, ran around in front of the house, and my wife goes chasing her out, and somebody picked her up and called the police, and the police came, and they called Child Protective, and we had them investigate. You know, I mean, it just became a big, you know.
Right.
Which, you know, nothing came out of it eventually, but I had to fight them off and I had to appeal their decision. And, you know, it took like a year and a half of...
Oh, man. So your daughter had to stay in care for a year and a half?
No, my kids never went to foster care themselves.
Oh, thank God. Okay, they just came around and watched.
I have a stepson who is in foster care. And, you know, he was abused when he was in foster care. And I never met him until he was like... 14 years old. So, you know, I married his mother when she was fighting and her rights were terminated like 6 weeks after our daughter was born. And, you know, we were investigated because that worker reported us to a worker in our county. We were investigated and we were allowed to keep our daughter, you know, because, you know, quote, we were great parents. And, you know, then 6 weeks later, her rights were terminated to her son, which was with a, you know, from a different father. And his father was abusive, but, you know, he's long gone and she just couldn't get her son back. But, you know, 10 years after they terminated her rights, they called her up and apologized and had visits. And we went up and met this kid. You know, he was really, really messed up. I mean, they had him on 7 different pills a day, living in a group up in northern Maine. And, you know, it took us like an hour and a half to drive there from where we lived.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Well, I'm hoping that more people will wake their eyes up to that things are not always as they seem to be. I know there's a lot of good books out there. This guy, what's his name, Carlos Morales. He wrote a book with Illegally Kidnapped. It's called The Case Against Child Protective Services. That's another one. I guess we have to stay alert and do some of the advice that you gave. Document everything that you deal with them. Make sure you document it. Write it all down, dates and times. Your mail gets certified. In the name of who you spoke to, you know, we don't have that much longer left, but is there any other advice you have or anything else?
If you're a parent fighting for your kid, the last thing you really want to do is publicize your case. And that's something that I'm seeing more and more of people doing. You know, like I have, you know, close to 5,000 friends on Facebook. And, you know, so many of them have lost their cases because, you know, they were so hell-bent on speaking out against the injustice instead of doing what they had to do to get the kid back. And so
you don't really think so? See, I don't know if I agree with that. As a former reporter, I know that once you put fire into somebody's butt, if they're doing wrong, it's going to come out.
But the cases that I've seen that happen with have been pretty extreme. You know, I mean, like there was a case in Pennsylvania where a mother had a newborn baby and she ate that morning a poppy seed bagel from Dunkin' Donuts and tested positive for opiates because of it. And they took her kid for a month. The first month of this kid's life was, you know, away from his mother. And so, you know, the media got a hold of that and the media, you know, generated public outrage. But 9 out of 10 times, the media is not going to be friendly to the parents. And, you know,
what was the media saying? Because my thing is as an addiction specialist is if she tested positive for opioids. I mean, trust me, I know that poppy seeds bagels can give that kind of a thing, but they could have did a hair sample to see if this was really just the bagel or if this is a long-term thing.
Well, they you know, tested her again and she tested negative, but
just one of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not something that, you know, was an ongoing problem. I mean, it was a minuscule amount. that they tested her on. So, I mean, but this is the case. Another case was where this father took his son to a Detroit Lions baseball game. And his father was a college professor who never had a drink in his life, you know, and thought he was getting his kid a lemonade, but mistakenly got him a Mike's Hard Lemonade, not realizing it was an alcoholic beverage. And he ended up not being able to go home for like months. You know, I mean, they had to,
How would he mistake that? No, I'm confused. Especially the baseball ID.
He didn't know. You know, I mean, he just thought he was buying his kid a lemonade. He didn't watch TV, so he never saw all the advertising.
It's not that. But a Mike's Hard Lemonade, I know for a fact you have to be ID'd. There's no way you can buy one of those just randomly.
No, he bought it. He bought it. He bought it for the kid. You know, he didn't realize
it was. That's what I'm saying. If you, for, it, it says, there's no way to mistake. In my opinion, I would think there's no way to mistake that for a regular lemonade. That's just my opinion. It would be weird to me.
Yeah, but you're familiar with the drink too. You know, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, I know it very well, and it does look like
regular lemonade.
Are you there? You still there? Yeah. I'm sorry about that. I apologize. There's no way to mistake it. Wait a minute, huh? There's no way to mistake it because, trust me,
where the media was able to generate the public outrage. You know, and that's what you're trying to do with the media, but you know, more often than not, the media won't even take the case. So really, all of this publication comes out on social media, like Facebook or YouTube or something like that, and they'll use against you. And you know, I've seen it more often than not, and the people, you know, aren't out there, you know, they're out there screaming against injustice, they're out there yelling CPS is corrupt, and they are, you know, I mean,
oh you're saying that they may be too, I mean,
they're really going out to the news media and saying, you know, getting a reporter to, you know, tell their story, because you know, usually these cases, you know, have confidentiality laws in place which prevent these, you know, reporters from telling the stories. And it's usually just the pretty extreme cases where, you know, it's really outrageous. Yeah. Like, you know, the Pricey Bagel case, or the case where the mom, you know, went and took her kids and left her kid, you know, walked 15 feet away to give money to a Salvation Army kettle, brought her other kids back, and you know, ended up losing her baby because she left him in the car for like.
Well, that to me is that you should lose your child leaving the car. I mean, who would leave a kid in the car for anything? That's just me.
She walked just a few feet away.
Wouldn't matter wouldn't matter where you go. I'm a mother. I know. I would never turn my head for my kids. I know, but I'm just saying.
I agree. I wouldn't either. But you know, I mean, it's just, you know. And it's not like the kid was left in the car for hours. You know, I mean, it's like the kid was left in the car for about 5 seconds while the mother and her other children, you know, you don't take an infant out into a snowstorm. And I guess it was one of them situations. Right. But, you know, I mean, you know, the thing is the other thing is you can't really judge parents, you know, and parents really get a raw end of the deal when it comes to, like, you know, if any of these stories make the news, then, you know, you look at sections under any of these news articles online, you know, all those horrible parents, and you know, they should like hang them, they should, you know, lock them up and throw away the key. You know, so I mean, there's very little support because, you know, the general public is really uneducated on child abuse, and what they see on TV is only the most absolute horrific cases. You know, so they don't see the kid who was taken away because they got a spanking. You know, they see the kid who was taken away because they got, you know, the crap beat out of them. So it's, you know, there's a big difference in severity levels. So, I mean, just because somebody's involved with child welfare doesn't mean they're a monster. It might mean, well, she's like 17 years old and on her own and doesn't have the support of family. And now she's a new mom. I mean, you know, there's a million different reasons somebody can get involved with child welfare that doesn't even have anything to do with abuse.
Right. That's true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but we'll have to do a part two one time because we're running out of time. I told you I wouldn't keep you as long, but any last goodbyes, as they say, and tell people about the website again.
The website is Legally Kidnapped, and what I do is I basically, you know, watch news feeds and track all of the things that are wrong with the system fixed. And, you know, anything that's coming out that they're doing that's right, I try to document that too. But we're preserving the record because, you know, people don't really realize how bad the system is. When the news talks about it, it's a, you know, they get a totally different view. It's almost like a painted picture. You know, with the blue skies. You know, they make it look like Disneyland.
We thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
And as you've heard it from Legally Kidnapped, that's Patrick, and LegallyKidnapped.com. Did I say it correct? And this is your host, Tanya Cooper, and Foster Keys Unite Podcast. And we're signing out. Till next month, we'll see you all very soon. And thank you very much for listening in. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Pat.